Thanks for listening to season 4 of the Utah Real Estate Podcast.
The most downloaded series in the whole state and possibly the world.
Hello, I'm Steph Scholl here with the one and only Silver Dollar Man.
Also known as Scott Stevenson. This year, we are consulting with community leaders about the future of the Beehive State.
And how you can best secure a house for your home.
Join the thousands.
And my mom.
That subscribe every Thursday for the most exciting hour of the week.
Scott, guess what? We have a listener.
We have millions of listeners.
Scott. No, we have one loyal listener that I know of, and it is, I know I say my mom, but yeah. She doesn't listen. It's actually my sister-in-law, Mandy. She's listened to every single episode, starting from way back before you were on.
When you it mean started. Mandy from Sandy?
Mandy for Sandy. These next couple of episodes that we're having, they're all questions that she had, because I was like, Mandy, what do you want to know, since you're the one listening? So today, she was like, what are, like, the heavy hitters, the experts doing right now in real estate?
Well, yeah, because everybody's wanting to protect their assets right now.
And they want to know, is now a good time to buy? Should you be selling? What are the people that know what they're doing right now? So we brought in Clay Rockwood. He is the co-founder and partner of Solar Capital Group. And Clay knows his stuff. He started doing what, Scott?
What, like triplexes, and worked his way up to apartment complexes and all kinds of big stuff. Okay, so Clay, what are savvy investors doing right now?
I mean, it depends on your investment strategy, right? There's people going to be having different theories on different things, but from what I'm seeing in our industry and others that do kind of what I do, buy multifamily properties, commercial properties, I think people are excited, honestly. And that may be strange, you know, approaching what may be a recession or kind of some uncertainty in the market. There's a lot of excitement because what we've seen over the last 3 to 5 years is just a frenzy, right? It's so competitive, at least in my world, where we're going out trying to buy properties. We're competing against, you know, dozens of other groups. People are putting up huge non-refundable earnest money deposit. You know, it's like it's hard to compete. So you're kind of seeing a pullback from a lot of groups, which is great. And so there's opportunity out there. And especially as we see pricing adjust, right, as you know, home prices and even commercial pricing adjust, it just gives more opportunity for us as buyers to go in and get better deals, right? So I think it's kind of a double-edged sword where you maybe see home values adjusting and people are like, oh, my equity's gone down, my property. Yes, that's true, but it's also a good thing for those looking for opportunities to still find good investment, you know, opportunities.
Okay, and you mentioned commercial, because sometimes when I think about investing, I forget about commercial property because I probably think that it's like way too expensive. But tell us about, I mean, with COVID, a lot of people weren't working in the office. So is the commercial real estate industry here?
Yeah, I mean, when I pass by some of these big commercial buildings, the parking lots look empty. So it always comes to my mind, is that a good investment at this point? You know, the commercial properties? Tell us.
Yeah, well, I think, again, it depends on what asset class you're targeting, right? In commercial, we have so many, there's a gamut. There's office, there's retail, there's flex space, industrial, warehouse, multifamily, mobile home park, right? So it depends on your niche. But as far as like, yeah, you're driving by these big office complexes that are empty, I know that a lot of those owners have definitely been hurt. But again, that provides an opportunity, right?
For those that are looking, yeah,
hey,
sure.
I think the horizon now that COVID is kind of, you know, passing, we're getting beyond that. People may be going back to work. There may be an opportunity here where I can go snatch up these properties for pennies on the dollar. And then in 2 or 3 years, when things kind of go back to normal, there'll be an opportunity there. I don't know, right? So that's not really my role as the office space. But as far as multifamily, I look at it, you know, someone always needs a place to live, right? Even if the economy's bad, the market's gone down, the first thing people are not going to give up is their home, right? Their space to live. You know, they may give up their storage unit, they may give up their office, they may give up all these different things, but that's why I love multifamily and housing in general. It's usually the safest asset class as far as, you know, in a recession and things like that. We see it outperform most of the other, you know, commercial assets. And as far as rental rates, right, in a recession, rental rates typically rise.
Right.
It's kind of the inverse, right? You'd be surprised by that. But yeah, as you know, economies go down and things get, you know, tighter for people, sometimes they move out of a house and they'll move into a rental, right? Or they'll move into an apartment. So you actually do see a demand increase for rents during a recession.
Okay, so one thing, I mean, a few things actually, as you were talking, I love Scott, his optimism.
Oh, yeah.
We're in everything, like, as you're talking about the commercial, you're like, yeah, but it creates opportunities. And yeah. then, but what you said about everyone needs a place to live and that, like, rents during a recession go up and that it's the safest. I would never really view a multifamily unit as a safe opportunity because it's more money, it's more risk, but that's interesting that it's actually safer.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think that's the misconception I think a lot of people have is that when they think of commercial, and I was the same way. You know, I originally started out buying small duplexes, fourplexes, this kind of properties, just because that's what I knew and could kind of understand. And I thought, oh, I could never imagine buying a 30 or 50 unit or 100 unit apartment complex. That's for someone else, right? That's for a huge investment firm or a huge fund or something like that. But I think that's kind of why my story, I think, resonates with a lot of people. You know, I coach a lot of people, I mentor a lot of people that kind of come from that same mentality. It's like, I could never do this. You know, it's beyond me. But I've kind of proven that, hey, there is an opportunity for you here, and it's a lot easier than you think to get into this space and to understand it, right? And once you kind of know the common terminology, the basic terminology, it's a lot easier to get into than you think. In fact, getting a loan on an apartment complex is leaps and bounds easier than getting a loan right now on a single family home.
Yeah, now see, that's what I was immediately when I think, okay, I'm going to buy an apartment complex with 50 doors. That's going to cost me, I don't know, whatever it is, $5 million. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, $5 million, who's going to loan me that kind of money? What kind of money would I need down? Boy, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I'm not worthy of that kind of risk. I mean, that's the way I think about it. And I think most people would think that. Every common guy would go, nobody's going to give me $5 million to buy an apartment complex. Who am I to get that? And who am I? Yeah. So my question for you is, who is everybody that's doing this?
Great question. Well, I think you're capable of doing it, Scott, so don't sell yourself short. But no, that's a great question. That's the common thinking that people have, and that's nothing wrong with that. It's obviously normal, right? You have to understand your risk and where you're at. But the interesting thing is I've learned over the years, and I didn't know this in the beginning, but I've leveraged the experience of other people. That's where I think I've become really good at, is not trying to become the expert at everything and doing it all myself. This is a team sport. Investing in real estate is a team sport. That's so true. You look at all the big operators, excuse me, how they've started. They've learned that skill. So what do I mean by that? Okay, so if I want to go out and buy a 50-unit apartment complex, how do I do that? Where do I start? That may be daunting and just overwhelming. And so most people just stop.
Right.
Say, I don't know how to run the numbers. I don't know how to get a loan. How do I find tenants? How do I manage the property? Well, okay, let's start with each of those things. Okay, how do I buy this? Well, maybe I need money, right? Okay, so who can I go partner with that may have money? I go start networking, go to some REIA events, you know, talk to other investors in the community. Say, hey, I've got this opportunity, or I have this idea. Would you be interested in partnering with me? Maybe bringing some of the money if I can help bring this piece of the puzzle to the table, right? And you'll be surprised. There's a lot of people out there that have money that want to put it to work if you can have the business plan, right? Okay, well, how do I find tenants? How do I manage a property? I know nothing about that. Well, guess what? I can call up a property manager. Hey, I'm looking at this property. Can you help me run some numbers on it? Help me figure out what would you rent this for? Can you manage it for me? Yes. Well, what about a loan? Okay, I go talk to a mortgage broker, right? So, you know, same thing with construction. How do I renovate the, you know, I don't know construction. How do I know how much it's going to cost to put in new flooring, countertops, you know, to renovate the property? Well, I can call my Rolodex of five contractors and get bids and have them help me. So you start acquiring this team in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a team sport, right? So again, I'm utilizing the expertise of other people to bring about this common goal of buying and operating this apartment complex. And once you realize the power in that and how, honestly, how simple it is, if you can just be the connector, the puzzle.
Yeah.
You're taking these puzzle pieces and you're just putting them into place. That's really your role. That's really my role as an operator of multifamilies. I'm taking the correct puzzle piece and putting it in the right plot, you know, the right place. I don't have to know what, you know, how that puzzle piece works or who made that and how, you know, the design of it. I just have to know how to place it there. And so that's really, in a simple way, that's the answer, is that you can start filling all those gaps of things you don't know how to do with the expertise
with other people. Kind of like, Stephanie, one of my favorite sayings that I say all the time is, the early bird gets the worm. A lot of people don't get this. The early bird gets the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese.
Yeah.
So that's always been one of my favorite sayings that people always go, well, what does that mean? Well, you know, you capitalize on other people's experiment. You don't have to be the one that sticks your head in the mousetrap and gets snapped if other people have already gone there before you.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is, use these dead mice in a learning experience so that you can succeed in what you're doing.
Exactly. And I think it's like anything. I mean, it's hard to look at someone else's success or someone else's where they are now and say, well, I want to be there and I can't be there. How do I get there? Well, they started somewhere else, right? There's a beginning point.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone starts at a beginning point. So for me, like I said, that was buying. My first property we ever bought was a triplex, me and my wife. I remember I had sleepless nights when we were under contract, just thinking, same thing, like, how am I going to pay for this? Like, can I afford this? What if I can't make the mortgage payment? I mean, it was stressful. You know, but once we closed, we rented out two of the apartments and we lived in the third one. You know, we were just newly married, lived in this little upstairs attic unit, and we basically lived for free because the tenants were paying our mortgage. And that's when it kind of clicked for me. I mean, I was like, wow, there's a power in this. There's a power in you know, having tenants and building wealth, you know, through owning real estate. There's tax benefits, all these things. But that's where I started, right? It's one property at a time. You start with one deal at a time, and you start growing and scaling and learning, and you know what I mean? So, but it just has to start with somewhere, and it has to start with some sort of action. And I think that's where most people get hung up, is it's the idea that's so daunting, and so they just give up before they even start.
Oh, 100%. And I, like, even as you're like, yeah, it's not that big of a risk, as Scott was like, if I get this loan, $5 million, I'm thinking apartment complex, that sounds like a lot more than a $5 million loan, you know, like, that sounds, and then as there's all these tenants, and then, yeah, to get these, but what if your contractor ends up screwing you over? What if your property manager does something and evicts a tenant wrong? What if no one wants to live there because there's mass shooting or, like, it's haunted? And so I can see how people don't want to take that step, because you can stay in the what if game forever. And even as I was saying that, even though I'm not looking right now, it, like, heightened my anxiety thinking of everything that can happen. And so, I mean, as you've seen investment deals, do you see more often that things go right than go wrong?
Yeah.
Or do things go wrong?
Oh, yeah. Things always go wrong. I mean, that's the nature of life.
Right? Yeah.
There's always risk. That's the thing. There's risk with any type of investment. I mean, you throw money in a stock, there's risk, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You
right,
have
sure.
no control over what that company's going
to yeah.
do. But to me, that's why I love real estate, is that there is a heightened level of control. And that's why I like, because I've talked to a lot of friends that don't invest in real estate. They're heavy in stocks and bonds, and that's just a whole other world for
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah.
But to me, that's more risky, because I have zero control over over what happens with my money. I have no control over what some CEO back in the middle, you know, back in the East is going to do yeah. with his company. Whereas is my tangible asset that I own, this apartment complex, I can go in and say, okay, I know where this is. I know what it looks like. I know what the apartments look like. I know what I can do. Okay, I can come in and I can put in some new flooring. I look at the previous owner. Okay, he didn't raise rents in 30 years. Well, I can go in and immediately raise rents and add value, right? So there's more control in a way mm-hmm. with that asset. Of course, there's risk, right? You could have a storm or a fire, but again, you hedge that risk with insurance.
Right.
Or you're always hedging risks, right? Saying, okay, what if there is crime, high crime rate? Okay, well, I have to account for that in my rents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe I can't get a higher rent in this neighborhood as I could in this other neighborhood. Well, okay, when I'm underwriting the deal or I'm looking at the deal, I analyze all that and I look at all that. And again, I leverage the experience of other people to help me understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, to your point, Stephanie, like, investing in real estate is a risk. It's inherently risky, right? And it's not for everybody. I've talked to a lot of people that I've kind of explained what I've done and my path, and they're like, yeah, that's just not for me. I just will never do that. I just mm-hmm. don't have the risk tolerance for that. I'm not an entrepreneur. I just like my 9-to-5.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's truly nothing wrong with that. But for me, it's always been about, I've seen the power of generational wealth. I want to be able to provide an opportunity for my kids, my posterity to like have opportunities that I may not have had growing up, right? And being able to pass that on to them. So that's, for me, that's kind of the why, is like, I want to do this. I want to be successful so that I can leave a legacy for them, and to honestly make an impact, to give back and help and have the means to do that. So that's just kind of.
Well, so I know you're not a forecaster, but I mean, it seems, you know, there's gloom and doom right now.
Yeah.
But occasionally I talk to somebody like yourself and they see this as a great opportunity,
yeah,
a great time for opportunity. So do you see it that way? And if you do, why?
Yeah, great question. I do, honestly, because again, it's all in your perspective, right? So you could say, okay, the economy is tanking, or there's, you know, higher interest rates. It's hard to get, you know, more debt and leverage on your properties. Well, we just shifted now and we do more seller finance or creative finance opportunities. You know, so we'll go approach a seller and say, hey, instead of us going out and getting a high interest rate loan, why don't you, Mr. Seller, carry the loan for us, carry the note for us? We'll pay you an interest rate. So instead of us paying you, you know, let's say $1 million now for your property, we'll pay you $1 million now plus a 5 or 6% interest rate. So over the course of the next 10, 15 years, you'll make $1,500,000. Instead of $1 million now. Plus you have all the tax benefits. If I were to pay you $1 million today, this year, that's gonna put you in the highest tax bracket. You're gonna, half of that's gonna go to the government. Whereas if I pay you small increments every month on an installment sale, a seller finance, that keeps you in a lower tax bracket. You know, so there's all these benefits. It's all just how creative you can get and how willing you are to learn these different strategies, right? So that's—
Do you find people willing to do that?
Oh yeah.
Seller finance? Is that done a lot?
Oh yeah. Very common.
It is very, very common.
Yeah. Especially now. It's getting more and more common. I mean, most of the commercial deals I'm seeing right now in the market, most of them are offering seller finance.
And they offer seller finance because they think this is a time more difficult to get money. And so for them, they can control that, sell their property, and get out from under whatever it is that they have.
It's an opportunity for them to be able to sell.
Right? Yeah.
So if they want to sell and they can't sell for the price they wanted to now to a, you know, to a cash offer, a normal sale, they say, well, okay, I still want to sell, so I'm going to offer these terms and I'll make an interest rate. Obviously, I won't get my large chunk of money right up front,
mm-hmm. Sure.
But I'll get that over the next 5 or 10 years or whatever. I mean, it's all—
Yeah, whatever the note is. Yeah, sure.
And then that's all in the contract.
It's all in the contract, yep.
So like no one can be taken advantage of.
No, yeah, it's all done legally.
I sound like so sketch, like where, but these are the questions I know that Mandy is wondering, our one listener.
And Governor Cox.
See, Scott's making up that Governor Cox is our listener.
We need to get him in the room.
You know, okay, so going back, there's two things that you said that I want to touch on. Mm-hmm. And when you talked about, you've talked to people and they're like, I could never do that. Like, mm-hmm. I could never invest. And you're like, that's fine. What do you feel like are characteristics of someone that's willing to take these risks? Like, describe that type of person.
What I found is the people that have the most success are the people that are willing to take imperfect action.
Okay.
What do I mean by that? I mean, you don't have to have all the answers, like, uh-huh. like I alluded to in the beginning.
Yeah.
Right? Is that you don't have to know everything. And I think that's the temptation or most people want, is they want to know it front and back before they take a step.
Mm-hmm. Right? Right.
They want to learn. They want to get the textbook. They want to go to the YouTube university and mm-hmm. learn everything they can before they ever do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've personally met people that have literally spent $100,000 in seminars, books, courses,
man,
that have never done a single deal. And it blows my mind because there's this tendency to have, you know, analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
Right? It's like they want to overanalyze everything and understand it all, and then the opportunity's gone.
Aren't they trying to eliminate any risk?
Yeah.
They're like, I want 100% assurance, zero risk here.
Yeah, they're like, I want to find the best deal. I want to find the home run, the deal of the century. And I'm like, look, there's maybe been one or two in my whole career that I've ever seen a home run deal where I'm like, this is a no-brainer. This is the best deal I've ever found. Most of the deals we buy are mediocre deals. They're just mediocre deals.
Yeah.
But we know that, hey, if we hold this long enough, if we're smart and implement a good strategy, real estate, what happens over time? It goes up in value. It's one of the most stable assets that's ever existed. I look at it as like, it's the best proven franchise that's ever existed. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
How many people own real estate? How many people have bought properties? Millions. it's the most proven franchise that exists. Just follow the franchise model. Look at other people. What have they done? Well, they buy properties. They sit on them over time. The properties go up in value as tenants pay down the debt. And there's this gap of equity that keeps getting created, right, over time. So, yeah, I think back to your point, it's just someone that's willing to take imperfect action, not knowing the final, not knowing all the pieces, but saying, hey, look, I understand the basics. I'm going to go put one step forward and just see what happens. A lot of people have a short-term view of and everyone wants to get rich quick, right? And that's not, in my experience, there are niches within real estate, wholesaling. We do some of that as well, where it's quick money, quick cash. Yeah. But I have a view of real estate of a 10 to 15 year. Like that's, when I buy a property, I'm looking at this on a 10 to 15 year term. And that's hard for a lot of people. They're like, oh man, 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years never will come.
10 years goes.
Yeah, I know.
10 years goes so fast.
It really does. And the older you get, Stephanie, the older you get, the quicker that goes.
Exactly. So, and I'm in this boat where I'm like, I'm looking 10 years back and saying, oh my gosh, if I could buy a property for what I bought my first one at 10, 15 years ago, I would have bought everything I could.
I
would have literally been selling my, you know, my hair to buy a property, like anything I could do. And I don't want to be in that same boat in 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Saying, oh my gosh, in 2022, I should have bought all these properties because look what values have done. Look what's happened. Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But again, yeah, you just have to get comfortable with that. And I think for a lot of people, once they do their first deal, there's kind of this magic of the first deal.
Well, so Clay, here's my question for you. So there are a lot of different ways to invest. You know, you got the retail, you got the apartments, you've got you know, commercial office space, mobile homes, parks. I don't know, a lot of other type of commercial buildings. What have you found to be the most exciting and successful? And it's probably exciting because it's successful.
Yeah, I mean,
do you have a favorite?
It's yeah, and again, it's personal preference.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have a different level of interest, what they like to invest in. I mean, I know guys that only invest in single family homes, turnkey rentals, and they love it and they do great. There's nothing wrong with that. I've always gotten away from, I mean, I personally don't own any single family rentals. They're all multifamily because I've always looked at it like, oh, if that tenant moves out of the house, I'm not making anything.
Yeah.
Whereas if I have a fourplex and one tenant moves out, I still got three paying me rent, right? So it's again, it's a risk assessment.
Yeah, a risk analysis.
Yeah, that's just my personal preference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with investing in single family. But but back to your question, like what's the best, which one do I get excited about? Again, I just love multifamily. It's what I started with. It's what makes sense to me. I mean, self-storage is exciting. We don't own any self-storage and a lot of people do really well there. Mobile home parks, again, it's the same idea with housing, but it's cheaper housing, right? So again, during a recession, mobile home parks typically outperform single families and multifamily because they're the cheapest place to live.
Right.
And you know what I mean? So it's just, I get that and I like that asset class. I steer away from, I mean, we own some office complexes and things like that. But again, to your point, it's, if there's a downturn, that's usually the first thing to go.
Yeah. You know,
someone's going to move out of the office and go work from home or something. So for an investment strategy, again, I think it's good to be well-rounded and have your investments in different assets, right? So I invest personally with other groups too. I don't just invest in my own deals. I invest with others passively.
Yeah.
That's the beautiful thing about us too. Like we buy these deals, but we raise money from other people.
Yeah.
Right? So we're raising capital from normal people that want to put their money to work passively, and we can offer a great return passively.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, if you're you know, someone who's like, hey, I've got 50, 100 grand sitting in a bank account or an IRA or something like that.
It's hardly making anything.
It's making nothing, right? Hey, I want to go, you know, I can put this in a multifamily project or a mobile home project and earn a 20% annual return. I mean,
yeah. Who wouldn't want to jump on that?
Who would want to do that? You're going to double your money in 5 years,
right?
Like it's kind of a no-brainer, especially with the tax benefits. I mean, that's a whole other thing we can get into. But like, yeah, so once people kind of understand the power behind investing in these types of assets, they usually keep coming back and referring their friends and like, holy cow, I didn't even know this is an option, right?
You
know,
so
yeah.
Well, with that, I mean, there's several, I just have all the questions because I heard you speak to the Women's Real Estate Investment Group.
Yeah.
And with mobile home parks, you said that that's actually something that cities aren't building anymore. So they're sort of like a gems.
Yeah, they're a dying asset class.
Yeah. And I didn't know that. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So it's sort of like a unicorn if you get a mobile home park. But also, I learned something from that class that like blew my mind. So can you talk about how the 1031 exchange, like, you can make it so that you don't have to pay the taxes in the generation you pass it on to? I'd never heard that before.
So yeah, this is kind of deep. So this may be next level stuff, but I'll try and outline.
Dumb it down for us.
And simply.
Yeah. Right?
So, but if you look at any successful real estate mogul, this is literally the strategy that they use. This is how they continue to build their wealth. Okay. So when you own an investment property, right, not your personal residence, but you own a rental, whether that's a single family, multi-family, doesn't matter what it is. If you own a piece of property that's not your personal house, the IRS, the government, has certain benefits to, they want to incentivize people to own real estate because they don't want to own it, right? They don't want to operate it. They want someone else to operate it and just pay taxes, right? So the government knows that. They incentivize people to own real estate. So part of that is you get, first of all, the depreciation. So there's tax benefits when you own property. The IRS lets you depreciate value over time, and it offsets your personal income tax. So currently, right now, I actually am getting a refund, a tax refund. I pay $0 in taxes. I pay negative dollars in taxes because of depreciation. That's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
But with depreciation, you normally have to pay that back to the government when you sell the property. So if you own the property for 10 years, let's say you owed $100,000 of depreciation that you've taken over those 10 years. If you were to just go sell and cash out, you'd have to pay the depreciation back plus the capital gain. Let's say you bought the property for $100,000 and you sold it for $200,000. So you made a $100,000 gain, right? Well, the government's going to say, hey, Uncle Sam needs to get paid that gain. You made $100,000 on this gain, so you need to pay that. Well, a strategy that most real estate investors use is they'll do what's called a 1031 exchange. It's a legal operation where you basically don't cash in to yourself. So that money, when you sell the property, doesn't come to your bank account. It goes to a 1031 intermediary company that holds the funds, and then you roll those funds into the next property you buy, tax-free. So you don't pay any capital gains, you don't pay any of that depreciation back, and you can roll all of those gains into the next project. Okay, well, so you're never getting away from the gain. You're never getting away from the depreciation. The government is saying, we'll let you defer it.
Yeah, transfer
it. We'll keep pushing it, kicking the can down the road, in essence, right? Okay, well, what happens at this next property? I've owned this one now for 10 years, and I want to sell that, and I've made a bunch of equity in this one. I go to sell, I do the same thing. I do a 1031 exchange. I roll all the proceeds, the gain, you know, the deferred taxes, into the next project or the next three projects. You can spread that out, you know, so you can see how you could buy a duplex in 5 years. I sell that and buy two duplexes, or then in 5 years I sell those and buy four duplexes, and you see how this can compound. Well, what happens at the end of life, right? Okay, you've done this your whole career. You're just kicking the can down the road. Well, when you die, in essence, your heirs inherit that estate, your assets, at a stepped up tax basis, meaning they're going to inherit all of your assets at the current value of when you die, and that all the capital gains, all the depreciation you've owed to the government gets wiped away. There's no gain, no tax ever paid.
I like that idea, Stephanie.
Well,
am I on your will?
That truly is the strategy of the rich.
Well, yeah, when you heard that, I was like, no wonder generations just keep on getting more wealthy. All this old money
is just going down.
Yeah.
Now, so I have a quick question, and I know there's an answer, and I'm sure you'll know it. So the property on 1031 exchange, if I remember correctly, on 1031s, there's a time frame there, isn't there, that you have to transfer that money? In other words, you sell a piece of property, you got to buy another one. Is it 6 months? What is it, a year?
You have 45 days to identify the next property or properties that you can buy. So again, it's a legal process, but you have to fill out this form with the 1031 company. Yeah, so you have 45 days to identify, saying, hey, these are the properties I'm looking at buying. And you can identify as many as you want. And there are certain rules and restrictions within 1031s. But yeah, you have 45 days. And then you have another, I think, 120 days to actually close on that next property.
And who holds that money in the meantime?
There are 1031 companies.
So it goes to a 1031 company.
It's a company that's designated that has a license to hold those funds and initiate the 1031 process.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're just an intermediary.
Yeah, they're just holding it there for a
while. They're holding the funds, and they charge a nominal fee to do that. But, yeah, once – and, you know, if you don't exercise the 1031, if you say, hey, you know what, I changed my mind, I don't want to buy this property, just – send me the money, then they just
Send it over to you, and then you pay the tax on it. Yeah. Well, I didn't know that you could give it to your heirs. That's an interesting.
Yeah, I've heard stories.
Why didn't my dad do this for me?
What's going on? I hear people that they're like on their deathbed signing over the deed to their kids.
And yeah.
It just crushes me because I'm like, you literally just made your kids pay half. Half of that inheritance is gone. If you would have just waited the day after you died, they inherit. So yeah, like I see this all the time with elderly people. They're like, hey, I want to put my affairs in order. I'm going to start signing over the deeds or these properties to my kids. In my opinion, that's the worst thing you can do.
So when they pass,
you're going to have to pay those taxes.
Okay. So if the, say your parent owns a home, does it have to be, it can be a home, it can be an investment home too, either one of them.
Yeah, this is only on investment.
On investment home. Okay, yeah. So it's an investment home. So when they die, and they have it in a trust, for instance, and however long they want to keep it in the trust, you know, whenever it gets settled, however long that may take, they should go through a 1031 exchange.
No, not necessarily. No, so once someone passes away, then it's just automatically the heirs inherit it at a stepped-up basis, meaning let's say those parents bought that house originally for $100,000.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now when they've died, it's worth $1 million.
Right.
Right. Let's say 40, 50, 60 years later, it's worth $1 million. So there's a $900,000 worth of gain there.
Right, right.
Well, if they pass away and now the heirs just inherit it, the IRS is saying, okay, you've inherited this now at a value of $1 million. So you pay no tax now unless you sell this for more than $1 million. Anything you sell for more than $1 million, you pay a gain on that. So let's say the heirs say in 2 or 3 years, let's sell it. We sell it for $1.1 million. Well, they've only made a $100,000 gain from what they inherited it for.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
They only paid the tax on that $100,000 as opposed to that $900,000 gain their parents got during their own.
So how do they determine the value of a home, for instance? How do they determine the value of a home that maybe stays in a trust for 5 years and they go back 5 years and say, what's the market value at that particular time?
Yeah. They have appraisal or broker price opinions. Yeah, things
back
that
from
the trustee will kind of determine that.
Yeah, interesting.
But I can see why, like when you said earlier that your why is this generational wealth.
Yeah.
Like how cool to set up the generations that way.
Yeah, exactly. Just give them an opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's fascinating stuff.
Right? There's still more that I want to ask with that. I'm like thinking how I want.
What? Just remember what Mandy wanted you to.
Governor.
Let's give governor. Let's give the gov a call.
So I mean, it seems like what I've heard from you is how this is a great opportunity. It's always a great opportunity to invest, but when you have the long-term plan in mind, it's like, you don't need to rush things or you don't need to feel like panicked. So that's why you're sitting here all calm.
On the outside.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's a long game. And if you're looking for quick cash, that's not what this is. But again, it's amazing to see what happens and how it compounds over time. How, you start acquiring more properties, you start getting more and more cash flow, and it just starts snowballing, right? More and more opportunities start popping up. And honestly, the desire for me was born kind of watching my parents and to be honest, the financial choices they made and how, looking at my dad and mom, they're still having to work even in their 70s, And I just look at it like, I don't want that for myself.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
It's a different mentality back then.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the mentality. I mean, I was raised with a bunch of siblings. It was buy your house and live and die in it.
Exactly.
And there was no, let's look at another house to invest in. What? Who does that? Nobody does that except maybe somebody like Donald Trump or something, you know? I mean, it was that kind of mentality. But that mentality is changing.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially with the access to information.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go on YouTube right now for free and learn everything you would ever need to know. How to buy real estate, how to analyze deals, literally the information is right at our fingertips. And that's why I think there's so much more opportunity now, is just because there's ease of access to learning these things. But again, it just comes down to taking the action of doing it, right? That's where most people stop.
And what got you started down this road?
Like I said,
I mean, when you were a little kid, did you say, "Hey, man, I want"?
I wanted to be a rock star. That was my thing. I was into music. So no, this is not it wasn't like from childhood. ironically enough, my brother and my mom had owned a piece of property together, and they actually brought me in on the deal when I was in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even younger, like late teens. They said, hey, we'll give you some ownership in this if you kind of help fix it up. It was, like a triplex we owned together. And that's really what started for me is I saw these tenants are paying to live here. They're paying our mortgage down every month. It's as if these tenants are putting money into my savings account every month. That's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? My mortgage is going down every month.
Yeah.
And I'm getting cash flow on top of that. So as my mortgage goes down and over time the value of the property goes up, I see this spread.
Yeah.
Keep spreading wider and wider and wider. It's my savings account is getting bigger and bigger without me having to do anything. And so that's when it really clicked for me is like the power of investing in real estate is that. And so that's kind of how I got my start. I said, we bought our first property, me and my wife, shortly after being married in 2011. And that property, we still own that, actually. It's kind of one we still own.
A keepsake?
Own, still love, yeah. We bought it for $220. Here's a crazy story. We bought it for $225.
Dang.
A triplex in Sugar House.
Oh, gold.
And it's probably $800,000 now.
Yeah.
And guess how much I've put into that? Nothing.
Yeah.
And the mortgage keeps getting paid down every single month. And the value
keeps going up.
Hey, it may dip. That's to your mm-hmm. point. Well, what if the market dips? What if? I'll hold it for another 5 to 7 years and the market's going to rebound.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect me because the tenants keep paying the rent.
Right. So so that's the way that you got that first property is you moved from there and then that became an investment.
Yep. Yeah, okay. So that's a huge strategy that I wish I would have done more of, honestly. It's called house hacking, is what they say. You know, where you move into the property, you live there, you fix it up or whatever, you rent out one of the units. And yeah, I wish we would have done that more. We went from that property and bought our first home that we actually lived in, you know, so... but yeah, that's what a lot of people do. They'll just house hack, especially because you can get better loan mm-hmm. terms when you're living in the property, right? You can get an FHA loan or less money out of pocket. Mm-hmm. So that's a great strategy. Yeah.
I feel like, yeah. I mean, this just gives me hope with my thing because like when in your class you had talked about for a lot of these investments that you're gathering people, they need to be accredited. And you shared what accredited was and most people in the room were like, well, I'm not there yet. But one of the ways to be accredited, it was like your income, but then also your property values, right? Worth. Yeah, your net worth. Mm-hmm. And so like owning more properties helps you to get there faster.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, being accredited, that just helps you to, if you're going to invest in different securities mm-hmm. and things or certain real estate deals, you need to be accredited, meaning the SEC wants to know that you're not taking advantage of people that, you know, that don't know what they're doing, mm-hmm. don't have experience. So that's what the accreditation status does for you. But
Well, you can be rich and dumb too, can't you?
Yeah, and the thing is, you don't have to be smart to be rich. That's definitely not a requirement. Yeah.
But I feel like that opens up more opportunities of just different investment.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah, I mean, the more wealth you have, the more money you have to play with, the more opportunities you have to place that money and make more money, right? I mean, money makes money. Right?
Yeah.
That's what it takes. But I think... And I would just say this, like, I think my goal would be for people to understand that it's simpler than you think it is. It's not easy, but it's simple. It's a lot simpler than you think it is. And it's a lot more attainable for the regular average Joe, just like me. I'm nothing special. I don't have a network that someone else doesn't have. I didn't have access to money that someone else didn't have. I'm not smarter than someone else. I just took consistent action over a long period of time to get where I am today, right? That's all it takes. And that's right. So that's what I'd say for the average person listening or saying, hey, well, I want to get into real estate. I want to start investing. Like, I want to start building my nest egg. I don't want to work till the day I die and have nothing to leave to my kids or whatever, right? Or I want to have the time freedom. And that's what a lot of people I work with. They just like, you know, I'm sick of the grind. I want to be able to go on vacation. I want to go to my kids' soccer games. I want to be able to travel, do, you know, these things. I want to have a life that I've dreamed of. Well, that's possible, right? It's very possible. But again, it takes work and action now. It doesn't take just dreaming for the next 10 or 15 years. Thinking, I want that. That'd be nice to have, but I'm not willing to do anything mm-hmm. to get it. know?
Well, I always say hope without action is just hope.
Exactly.
It never moves past that.
Yeah. No, but this is like a good kick in the pants for me because I've been like, okay, in my 5-year plan, but I'm like, no, like right now I can make these steps.
Oh.
You know, because I mean, I don't want to look back and be like, man, I wish I would have taken action.
Yeah. Totally. And I think if you're thinking that way, like, where do I start? So that may be the next title. Okay, well, where do I start? What's the first step? Like, I'm willing to take the action.
Yeah.
I just don't know what action to take. Talk to me. Talk to a mentor. I mean, people in this space I've found, especially in real estate, they're more than happy to share their knowledge. It's not this, there's no secret here. There's no, like, we're not holding something.
Yeah, we're guarding it.
Some secret that no one else knows. No, there's no secrets. It's all public. It's all out there. But I would just say, start asking questions. Start taking people to lunch. Say, hey, do you have 5 minutes, 10 minutes? I want to pick your brain. What would you do if you were me?
Mm-hmm.
How would you start? What would be the first step?
Yeah.
They're more than happy to share. I mean, that's what I do all the time. I was at a lunch 2 days ago with an old friend from high school. He's like, hey, man, I've been impressed with seeing what you've done. Help me out. What do I do? How can I get into this space? You know, I gave him some steps.
Mm-hmm.
I'll help you out. You know, you find a deal, let's partner on it. I'll work with you. I'll help you. You know, so
yeah.
There's resources out there. Again, don't try to just do it alone and think you have to figure it all out. Like, there's resources out there to help you and people that will put their arm around you and kind of mentor you.
And Clay is one of them.
I'm here, yeah.
Well, Clay, thanks so much for answering Mandy's question. And to the rest of you out there, if you have a topic that you want us to talk about, message us on Instagram or Facebook, or you can email me. And we would love to hear what topics you want to talk about.
Yeah, and they might even get an autographed picture of me. You know, so.
Just a plug for all you homeowners out there. Remember, you get to choose your title company.
And here at Title One, there's a reason why there's a one in our title. Learn all about our colossal closings
by going to AskUsUtah.com.
We celebrate with you in securing a house for your home.